From Studio 22, you're listening to ServeCast with your host, William Lamb. ServeCast is dedicated to challenging those who have a desire to serve, lead, and make the world a better place through the love of Jesus Christ. And now, here's William.
Hey guys, William Lamb here. Now, this is not a lead-in to a particular episode, but I just wanted to take a minute to say thank you to all of you that are listening to us on ServeCast. Our recent analytics let us know that we're being heard in 44 states in the U.S. and 33 countries around the globe. And in August of 2019, we'll hit our three-year mark since we launched our very first episode of ServeCast. It's been a lot of fun for me. I think it's making an impact. At least I'm hearing that. It would be really helpful and mean a lot to me if you would take a few minutes and rate and review us on iTunes. We're also available on Spotify. If you've got a particular idea or something that you want to, a topic or maybe a suggested person that we interview, shoot us an email. You can get us at surfcast22@gmail.com. surfcast22@gmail.com. Just shoot me a quick email there and we'll be sure to read it and look what might be a possibility. Again, hey, just thank you for taking time to listen to us, and we hope you stick around. Welcome back to ServeCast. We're glad you joined us. Now, as you prepare to listen to this episode, we are headed into the summer months at Lee University. Now, summer months at Lee University are really boring, as mostly any college, because our students have journeyed home to many different places, and we'll talk to two of those students in just a few minutes. Now, of course, we do have summer sessions, and we're really excited about that, so school does go on. But, hey, hang tight. We'll be right back in our conversation with Kana Cooper and Olivia Webb, and you don't want to miss the story. Hey, and we're back. My guest is Olivia Webb and Kana Cooper. Kana, we'll get to you in just a minute, but welcome to Studio 22. Mm-hmm. Olivia, you're graduating, or by the time our listeners have heard this episode, you are a Lee University alum. You have finished your journey at Lee. Where are you headed and what are you doing?
I am heading to Savannah, Georgia, to Savannah College of Art and Design.
You used to live down there. It's a nice place.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm so excited. I'll be getting my MFA in dramatic writing down there.
Now, so you like writing?
Yes, a little bit.
Yeah, but that's kind of odd because we'll talk in just a minute about service learning and how does that fit with some writing course, or how mm-hmm. does that kind of connect to that. Kana, you're headed home for the summer break from Lee University, but you're returning, right?
Yes.
So what are your summer plans?
My summer plans are to start an internship with my church. I'll be working with the kids there, and then once I get back, I'll be doing the program.
Oh, cool. Now, the program that she's talking about is a program that Olivia launched. How long ago, Olivia? A year now?
November 2017.
Wow, November 2017. Mm-hmm. So we're almost a year and a half into this thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember when I heard about the story and I heard about your passion for people that were incarcerated.
Yes.
And your passion for helping people to discover the realities of their own gifts and their own talents. Is that kind of a close resemblance of what you're doing and kind of how all that launched? Take us back to those early days and when you launched this program mm-hmm. that Kana was talking about just a minute ago. What is the program? What does it look like? And why did you do it?
Right. So I had been wanting to basically figure out where I fit in with serving others, basically, as an English major and as someone who enjoys writing. I'm not an educator. I'm not going into education for student aged people.
Professional educator.
I am an educator, but yeah, I'm not a
paid educator.
right. So I was thinking where do I fit basically? And I was more gravitating towards adults. And then I was thinking, okay, who isn't being served basically? Who is not being, you know, having a service provided to them? And so incarcerated people are an incredibly marginalized group, and they're really just out of sight, out of mind kind of situation. So that's kind of what got me on that road to going into jails and that kind of thing. So that was earlier in my college career. Didn't really feel like I was ready to teach other people about writing because I was learning about it myself. So after I got my associate's degree and transferred to Lee, I was like, okay, I've taken some writing classes. I feel like I could do this. So I started the program. And yeah, it is educational because I do grade the papers, and Kana also now grades them. And so grading really just looks like it's just notes. We just give them notes. There's no like you don't fail the class or anything. So we give them notes, but it is creative writing. And that's the biggest part of it is the emotional support people can get from creative writing and from self-expression, which when you're in jail, obviously you've got some stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And so my hope was to take an outlet basically to those people that are just forgotten basically.
So what does it look like? So Kana, you're getting ready to take over this role at Lee University and lead this the student venture. So what does it look like when you go into this? Have you obviously been in already?
Yes, I have. I've been going since last semester. It was a couple weeks towards the end, but it's been mostly this semester learning with and watching Olivia as she's kind of slowly handing over the reins, and then we're kind of at the point where I'm gonna start leading it by myself next semester.
So how often do you guys go into the jail, and what does it look like when you get behind the closed door?
When we go in, we'll have to just check in, go in, and we'll bring in some folders that have their writing. If they have written, then we'll return that, and then we'll set up the lesson, and Olivia will pull out the lesson plan that she has usually created or we've collaborated on, and then we'll just pass those out, and we'll just go through that for about an hour and once a week.
So once a week, how many weeks? Is there a particular series of weeks that this works during the course of the semester? Do you have like a start and finish kind of a mindset, or what does that look like?
When I originally started the program, I had it as a 6-week program, meaning that I just had 6 lessons basically. Okay. And then when I reached the end of those 6 weeks, I didn't want to stop, you know, going in, and I, you know, was making relationships there, and they wanted me to continue coming back. And so I just kind of restarted the course, and I was like, okay, we'll just start from the beginning. We've got new people in. But now it's gotten to the point where I have new students, and I have people that have been there, you know, that I've known over a year, inmates there. So me and Kana, especially once Kana got on board, we started creating new lesson plans. So there's really no end to it. And we don't want there really to be one. So we've got a lot of lesson plans, but...
So describe a lesson plan for me. So if I'm going to be sitting there for an hour and you're going to be doing this mentoring, this coaching, this teaching, what does that lesson plan look like?
It'll either change every week, or we might continue doing the same thing but go into more depth depending on what we feel like with the feedback we get. So it's very much the feeling of, okay, we go in and we leave, how did we feel like that went? So we've done lessons on character development, on what's it called, like how to just start a story, just the basic structure of that.
Okay.
And then we've talked about specifically focusing on dialogue, and there's a lot of activities, and I think that's we try to focus on doing more activities, or maybe looking at a picture, and then they have to write a story maybe based on that. So
So now this is an assumption, and by no means is it an allegation of any sorts, right? But there's probably a number of students who, when we say students, we're talking about the persons that are incarcerated that mm-hmm. you're serving. Perhaps a number of those have not yet finished high school. They've not had any completion of formal education. So this is very elementary, very basic. But what are their responses when... And I'm sure there was a time of getting to observe to make sure that you were going to continue, you know, and the trust factor and all of those things.
Yeah.
But what does it look like on the other side of the desk for that person who realizes that, you know, here comes Kana, and, you know, Olivia's back in the room, and we're back in school inside the jailhouse. What are you observing from the other side of the desk? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So when I first started the program, it was structured a little bit different, but I basically just had like questionnaires for the inmates to fill out so I could get a better read on the demographic, basically, just in terms of education. And yeah, tons and tons of guys, you know, not even at the 8th grade level, who are now, you know, adults, 30s, 40s, you know, so they haven't been in school, you know, for anybody, even if you did go all the way through high school, but you haven't, you know, tried to write something in, you know, 15, 20 years, that's its own challenge as mm-hmm. well. But yeah, so I did have a man who was, he was 37 and he was almost completely illiterate. I mean, could not read or write. So, but he was in the program, like he wanted to be there. So, so I got separate materials for him that were more just how to read and write, like that were, that I got offline. I didn't create those myself, but, so we try to create things that everyone can participate in. And then if there is somebody that is on a different level, we accommodate that as well when and where we can. But it is, like I said, there's no grades, there's no pass or fail. So So anyone who's going and willing to try to write, you know, we're going to help them and meet them basically where they are. And so like Kana said, talking about how they will write stories based on pictures is super easy because it's just their own inspiration. It's whatever they feel and they want to write about, and it's visual. So they don't have to understand terms or anything like that, the vocabulary of it. And it's totally just self-expression, which anyone can really take part in.
So when they write that story, Kana, right, and they slide that story across the table and you take it back to your dorm room and you read that story, what kind of impact are you seeing on that side of the house?
I really do love that part because I love reading. So every story that I get is a whole different topic. Even if you give them a prompt, they're going to come, every single person is going to come up with something different. Mm-hmm. And that's just what's so amazing to me. And like Olivia said, like, we're not grading it. We're just giving them feedback. And so I really like that because I feel like there's not really as much pressure on them, and then we don't feel as much pressure to no one feels like they're being judged by mm-hmm. what they're writing. Mm-hmm. We're just giving them some notes, and so yeah, I do really love that part, and I think that it encourages them to write more, and then it's cool to see that they are participating and that they're sure. getting something out of it.
So what are you seeing as it relates to the interaction between the inmates and each other? Mm-hmm. As they say, you have a person who has been coming to your class for over a year now, right? Yeah. And then somebody who's brand new. Mm-hmm. How are you seeing the collaborative efforts between the inmates themselves?
So there's kind of two sides to that. So there's the guys that have been there for a while. And so they kind of have mine and Kana's back when new guys come in. They make sure, you know, they've vouched for us basically. I've had guys, you know, be like, hey, they're here and they really care. Like, these mm-hmm. are some people that are here and they really care, so respect them. And we've never had issues with anyone disrespecting us. But, you know, sure. like, don't talk over us. Don't, you know, whatever it is. And just, you know, basically saying like, hey, they're you know, real ones or whatever it is that they would say.
Legit.
They're legit, yeah.
Yeah, that's the street cred. They got street cred, man.
We do, yeah, we do. We do over at Bradley County. But so on the other side of it, though, the writing side and how they collaborate together, they're cellies is what they would call each other, mm-hmm. the guys they live with. So, you know, we'll have them come in and they'll write things that they don't always want to share because they're nervous, you know, understandably. And so their celly will be like, hey, man, come on, you got to read that. You got to, you know, read it, whatever. Mm-hmm. So they do really encourage each other and lift each other up and build each other up through the writing, which is like super cool to see because there's not always a lot of that. You know, I mean, it is jail. There's some dark stuff going on.
Sure.
So it's nice that they can, you know, we can go to our little classroom kind of thing and we can just all sit and talk about writing, and they can not feel judged and you know, have their friends tell them to read stuff, and then we all mm-hmm. we snap sometimes. If we read poetry, we'll do the poetry snaps mm-hmm. or we'll clap for them or whatever, and it's really nice to see.
So they actually write their piece basically on a starter question that you give them or something, maybe a free write.
Mm-hmm.
Now when you said read, are they reading that to the group?
We don't ask them to always. Sometimes, you know, if we do an in-class exercise, and yeah. so we're going to just sit here for 5 minutes and write, then we'll be like, okay, does anyone want to share?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not required because I hate reading things I write in front of people. Like, it's just, it's scary. It's very vulnerable. So it's kind of they come in and they say like, hey, you need to go read that to Olivia and Kane, mm-hmm. or like, you need to. So it's their own prerogative basically sometimes. Mm-hmm. But then there also is the in-class parts where we ask them to read. But yeah, so it's really cool.
So what's a starter question look like, Kana? So, you know, you mentioned a while ago that you may give them a starter. I mean, is it, I don't know what your commitment to protecting, you know, the conversations that you have with these folks. So maybe just throw out a starter question that you might would use at some point.
Usually they're more of a prompt. So it'll just be like a girl and a boy are walking and they see a animal and like, what is that? And then they find out that the animal is like magical. So then that's just kind of like a start of what they could do. A lot of them really do like the pictures because they can kind of pull a lot of different things from that.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be a picture of maybe a dark castle looming in the background. So you just need to write about a situation that would take place in that castle. So I would say that's Stuff like that is really common.
So do you have a time limit on the writing experience for them, or what does it look like? You know, you're there for an hour, so
right.
you give them that prompt, you know, and then do they have like 10 minutes to write about that? Do they have 30 minutes to write about that? Do you coach them through that immediate process? Mm-hmm. What does that look like?
So usually like how the lessons are set up. So if, so like Kano said, we talk about like we have a lesson of dialogue talking about how to write dialogue. So we would talk about that for the majority of the hour we're there. And then we would leave off with a writing prompt, which is kind of like the homework.
Okay.
And so we would say, all right, go and write about the looming castle in the background and really try to incorporate dialogue. And then they have all week to work on that. So there's only certain situations where we do actually in-class writing. And so then like maybe we do a little bit of in-class and then they would take that and expound on it for the next week.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Hey guys, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. We're going to delve into this conversation. I'm interested in it and my interest is growing. And so we're going to ask a few more questions along the way. Hey, and we're back and I'm enjoying this conversation. Kana Cooper and Olivia Webb. And we're still talking about this idea of these weekly visitations to, in our city in Cleveland, Tennessee, to the county jail, for lack of a better term, where people are incarcerated and college students from Lee University are going into the community where these residents live. Now, are we talking about male and female? Or is it mostly male students now or male and female?
Male and female.
Okay, so you do one visit a week, right,
mm-hmm.
for about an hour, and you've been doing this since 2017.
Correct.
And you're nearing your completion, Olivia.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a hunch you'll probably come back and visit some. I hope so.
Oh, yeah. Know. Yeah.
So let's dig a little deeper with you guys for just a minute. You said you wanted to know how you could serve. And obviously, having been at Lee University, there's a service learning requirement at Lee, like there is at a lot of different schools, you know, across the globe. And so why incarcerated people? Do either of you have a history with people who were incarcerated? Do you have just a deep passion for caring for that particular group? Why could you not have done this? You could have, but why did you choose to do this at a inside of a jail? Why didn't you do this in the city park?
Mm-hmm.
Make sense?
Yeah. So for me, I don't really have a lot of connection to jail and stuff like that. I think I've got, you know, a couple distant cousins that have run into trouble or whatever. You know, we all have that.
Maybe all of our distant cousins.
Yeah, we've got that twice removed cousin, whatever. But it really just came down to who needs it.
Oh, okay.
Who really needs it? And like you said, Lee has tons of service, which is amazing. And the community we have here that revolves around service is really unique, I think. But so there's a lot of like programs for after school and those kinds of things that are educational, which is great. But like I mentioned earlier, I'm not going into education for school aged kids and stuff like that. It's not really my thing. And it's a need that's being filled and that Lee University is and the students here are filling well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking where is there a gap basically? And so that's what kind of led me to jail.
Kana?
I never would have thought of this. And I think that kind of defines that, yes, there is a need. And Olivia definitely found that when she talked about it with me. I was just very surprised that that was this is not something that I would have ever thought of getting myself involved in. Because I don't really have a connection to the jail. But then talking with her more, her program is the only educational program being offered in the jail. All the other ones are more like religious and things like that. And not that those are bad, but mm-hmm. it just shows that she really like found a very unique place.
Mm-hmm.
And in that unique place, like everyone is just very she's just found a very cool place, and I think that it's definitely been worth it.
Mm-hmm. So are there other students besides the two of you that are involved in this?
No.
Okay. So you're a rising junior, Kana, is that correct?
Yes, I am.
Okay, all right. So you'll have to quickly find a replacement for you as well.
Right, yes.
Yeah. So I'm interested in what drew the two of you together. So mm-hmm. did you know each other prior to this? Why did you think that Kana would be a good fit to carry this vision on?
So I was approaching my senior year or my last semester, and didn't want the program to die out. And so, like Kana said, when I started it, I was the only educational program taking place in the jail. And they're implementing a few more now, but I was like, I was the only creative writing, you know, program of its kind there. And so I was like, I don't want it to stop. I care about the people there. So I reached out to some of my English professors, and I said, hey, who do you guys know, whatever. And so Dr. Renislausis in the English department, said I could come to one of her classes and basically just pitch, my need basically and what I needed to do. And Kana happened to be in that class. And so she was one of the students that emailed me and said, hey, I'm interested in this. And so I interviewed her and we hit it off, and she's done great. I have total trust in her taking over the program. Like, I know she's going to do great. So it worked out really, really well.
So what's next for the program? So you're going to take a summer break, and then you'll be back in August, mid, late August, and you'll kick this back up shortly after. So do you anticipate that you'll eventually have more students going in with you so that you're able to serve more of the people who are, you know, living in the inmates who are living in the jail?
Olivia and I are going to develop more lesson plans throughout the summer, so we're going to keep being involved with the project and making sure that it's we can just keep growing it on that aspect. And because I know that from even the first lesson that Olivia has developed, it's already changed. And I mean, you know, it has been quite some time, but it's just it's going to keep developing. It's going to keep growing. So far, my plan is to go in by myself for the first semester, just to get a handle on seeing what is going on. And, you know, we've been growing more connections with that. But then, yes, eventually I will be bringing in another student, and we'll just go and just see what happens.
Okay, I'd like to hear from both of you. What are you learning about yourself through this journey? What have you discovered about yourself?
That's one of my favorite questions, because it's a huge thing that I have learned and continue to learn the more I spend time with the people there. And it's basically that I am in the position I am in because I was born to a certain family at a certain time, and I had parents that supported me and loved me and took care of me. And that's what led me down the path that I have found myself on, which is a pretty good one, I think. And I'm very blessed for that. But should I have been born into anyone's situation at the jail that they were born into, it is just as likely that I would have made the same decisions as them. So it basically comes down to equality in a way of just, I'm not better than them because of the decisions I've made. Like, I had it pretty easy, and I don't know that I wouldn't have made the same decisions as them if I had been in their situation. And things are not as black and white as they seem. There are so many things that go into the decisions people make, that is hard to understand if you don't find yourself in them. So it's really just learn to be not judgmental and to be understanding and accepting of people and seeing the humanity basically in everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that it's really been Lee that has shaped me a lot over the last few years that I've been here. Especially focusing on the service part, it's really all about, it's not about you, it's about the community. And I think that before I wasn't really as invested with that, because I am a little bit more reserved, and it takes a minute for me to get to know people. But when you're going out and you're serving people, then you have to be open to listening to them, because it's really important to them that you have to earn their trust. And if you're going to earn someone's trust, then you have to be able to connect with them. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what I've really learned, is how to connect with people and how to get to a point where I can be comfortable in other situations that I might not have experienced before, but that's okay.
So was it an immediate I'm hooked for you, Kana, or was it a few visits in to discover that this is what you really want to do?
I think that it was probably the first visit that really got me. I was definitely still came out very nervous. I wasn't sure of all my plans or anything yet, but I just saw how much Olivia really cared, and about how they cared about her. Like, they were so invested into it, and they wanted to be there. And I think that's what really made the difference for me, is that I knew that this was going to be a place that was going to be really good.
Now, have both of you already completed your last visits for the semester, or are you officially on summer break?
I'm going to try to go in this Friday if programs are up, just due to scheduling and that kind of stuff. Within the jail, programs aren't always running during our times that we go in. So we went in last Tuesday for a different program, actually, but still in the jail, still writing related. So that may be our last time going in. Just depends on if it's open or not.
So how will you assure these people that you're going to come back? Kana, how are you going to assure them that you're going to be back when school is back in session for you?
We've definitely talked about it throughout the semester, just with transitioning, and thankfully we did get to go and see them and mention to them that the program is going to keep going. And I think that the both of us have been pretty consistent when it's open. We're very honest with them if we aren't able to come. So I think that, I'm hoping that they are not worried or anything. But mm-hmm. as we've tried our best to let them know that we really care about them.
So I understand that, confidentiality is critical here, and you have to maintain that. But can you offer a favorite experience of a particular person who was an inmate who you saw a transformation in their life? Can you kind of allude to that or share a story mm-hmm. about that experience and how maybe a aha moment occurred for them and they understood their own dignity when perhaps maybe they had forgotten about the fact mm-hmm. that they still are human and that they still deserve to be treated fairly and to be treated right.
Mm-hmm. Just one story.
You can take more than one. I don't know. I'm just trying to, trying to protect confidentiality there. But I'm wondering, there's people who are going to be listening to us. Interesting point for us. We're heard in 44 U.S. states. Mm-hmm. We're heard in 33 countries around the globe, plus Canada. And so, Afghanistan, I mean, Tyler's kind of crazy. We have people who are listening to us in Afghanistan. You know, I think Belgium's on our list. Obviously, a number of states in the U.S. So somebody's listening to this, and they're never going to visit Lee University, and they're never going to, be a college student, but stories move people. Stories
Absolutely.
Give us a place
Absolutely.
To belong, right? So take a minute and maybe a story or two, or just kind of put us in the room with you for a minute.
Yeah.
And explain to us, what does that look like when that moment moves and that person who maybe didn't have anybody that they thought cared about them, mm-hmm. maybe they felt rejected, maybe they, felt like they were completely neglected, but yet, two college kids came along and their mm-hmm. life is now changing. Yeah, they're still incarcerated and they're probably, still going to have to pay the debt to society, but they're still people. They still
Absolutely.
Matter,
yeah.
right? What is that looking like on the inside of the house? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So the first one that comes to mind is this one inmate who we can call Ron. And he is this big dude, they're all bigger than us, basically all the men are, he's very tall and he's got all these tattoos, very, stereotypical rough looking guy. And so this is early on in the program that this happened. And so the way the program used to work, the pod that we were in the jail, basically it was me standing in front of like 44 guys. It was the whole pod. So there wasn't a lot of one-on-one, which was difficult. Now we're in a smaller room and there is it's very much group oriented. And so it's a little bit different, but for context. So I didn't get a lot of one-on-one with the guys in the beginning. And so one of the guards, the pod officers, came up and she said, "Hey, you've got to let Ron read this story to you. Like, he's going to turn it in or whatever, but, like, you need to hear his voice when he reads it. You need to hear it come from him." And I was like, okay. And so the pods are really loud and echoey, so that she took us to a different the trap, as they would call it, which is just a room between the pod and the hallway. And sat us down in there for him to read it to me. And this was the first time I was ever, like, one-on-one with an inmate. I had talked to people one-on-one, but never, like, that isolated, which is a little intimidating when you don't know them very well at first and that kind of stuff. So he sits down and he reads me this amazing story called Froggy Tales. That is a children's story. And it was so sweet and so heartwarming coming from this big, tough guy about this. And it was this children's story. And he said, you know, and he's one of the guys I've known for over a year now, who's great, amazing guy. And so he told me, you know, I never knew this was in there. I'd never written before this. And he's an excellent writer, wow, by the way. And he said, I never knew. I just didn't know it was in there. I didn't know it was a part of me, basically. And to hear him read that was really powerful, for sure.
That's a great story because, you know, transformation a lot of times happens deep inside before we ever really get to see it in the public setting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before I can just imagine as you're sitting there talking, you know, that Ron's experience when he wrote that and then kind of rehearsed it the night he went to sleep and thought about it, you know, and then the chance to share it with you, and then also the chance to reflect on it once that he shared it for the first time openly.
Yeah. Right?
Have you revisited that conversation with him at all? What have you seen in his development now, mm-hmm, since that first initial writing?
Yeah, so he wrote after that, continued writing. He got more comfortable just in the program, and he's now he's one of the ones that he's there every week. He comes into the program, and so that was in January of last year that I started in the mail pod, and so he's been coming ever since, and he's always been respectful. And as I've gotten to know him, he's been one of the guys. He really has a sense of humor, basically, mm-hmm, and he uses that in his writing, and jokes around with the other guys, and he just, I've just seen him, I guess, become more comfortable, at least within the program. I can't really speak for when we're not there, obviously, but he laughs, and it's just something about people's eyes. That sounds weird, but like, it's the window to the soul, and it really is. And so, like, mm-hmm, when you can sit with somebody and laugh with them and like see that in their eyes and see them smile, basically, like, it just, I don't know, it just it breaks down all the walls, basically, it doesn't feel like we're in jail when we're there, and mm-hmm, when you're laughing with somebody, and so getting to kind of see that in him and like see that change of the tough exterior guy that he is, but then, you know, he'll laugh or he'll crack a joke, and I'm like, I see what's really there,
mm-hmm,
and so that's been cool.
Stay with us. We'll be right back to conclude this episode as we talk about writing stories and the transformation process. All right, guys. So we're back, and this conversation is getting a little heavier, I guess, than I thought it would go. You know, my whole idea was just to talk to two kids who are going home for summer break, right, and kind of figure out, you know, what difference they've made. And I've used you as a poster child a number of times, Olivia, you know, in presentations. And so I just wanted to kind of sit with you guys and talk about it. But let's get real for just a minute. You know, we've been real, but let's get kind of direct for a second, right? So at least in the United States and in North America, you know, the justice system, many people on both sides of the street will say that justice is never, you know, done. And many will say, you know, well, they didn't get justice, mm-hmm, right? Let's get past that for just a minute. There's a lot of debate on both sides of the house, you know, on mass incarceration. And one of the best books I've ever read was Just Mercy by Bryan Stevenson. And we'll kind of lead into that book in just a minute. But realizing that the reality, whether it's true or not true, the reality, people are incarcerated and some are guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Some have done things that they should not have done, right? And as a result, in our current system, they are paying the time, right? They're doing the time that society calls for. So I understand there's a lot of debate on that. So I don't want to get buried in the debate, because the reality is the people on the other side of the bars, meaning this house, the jailhouse, right? They're legitimate people. They breathe the same air you and I breathe, mm-hmm, created by the same creator we were created by, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, their actions and their behaviors may have caused them to get there. Some will stay longer than others. Mm-hmm. You know, some will never sit in your program, but maybe the Rons of the world will go back to their cell and to their cellies, give an opportunity to teach them where, in 10 years, Kana, you're out of here and it's gone, you know, and you're on with your life. And somebody's still doing this little mm-hmm. go behind the bars thing, you know, at the local jail. So what I'm trying to allude to for just a minute is, how do we get past the emotion of the reality that this person has done a wrong and they're being held accountable for their wrong? And there's people who will champion what I'm doing and people who will say, you should not walk in there and do this. How did you get past that to go into this jail and to do what you're doing?
So there's not been a ton of opposition. There definitely is the, you know, me being a young woman going into, you know, a jail and being surrounded by male felons that sure. does that people have opinions about, you know. And I've never once felt endangered there or anything like that. But, you know, it basically, I don't know. I thought it was a foolish, you know, reservation to, I know that I was going to be safe there. It's a jail. There are guards there, you know, and like you said, like, they are people. Mm-hmm. We are all people. They're not animals that are waiting for someone to come along and victimize. That is not what's happening there. I've met some of the kindest people in jail that are, you know, they're not waiting to victimize people. So I would, the people having reservations about it is foolish. It's just foolish, I think.
Mm-hmm. Kena, so for you, right? It's over. Olivia's out of here. It's on your shoulders now, right? And you have to do, you know, yeah, you got a bunch of lesson plans you made over the summer, but how are you getting past the reservation or the reality that now you're carrying this burden?
Yeah, I mean, I really wish Olivia could just keep going. I know that she's going to hopefully, you know, keep it going somewhere else. I think that my biggest reservation wasn't even going that it was a jail either. It was just that I wanted to know that I could do it. I want to know that I was worthy enough to be able to teach them something, because yeah, I'm not gonna be a teacher either in terms of professional. So making lessons planned, haven't had a class on how to make mm-hmm. a lesson plan. So I think it was, yeah, I think because of Olivia's leadership and because of what she's already done and what she's taught me, I am way less reserved, and I've talked about that, just how I do feel comfortable there. I feel like this is where I'm supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And I think at first I just wanted to make sure that I was, and now mm-hmm. because of her, I think that I'm in a good place.
So. Sure. Olivia, on the break, we were talking about the book Just Mercy, and one of my, I guess, favorite quotes from the book, Bryan Stevenson, the quote says, "Each of us is more than the worst thing we've ever done." Mm-hmm. And you were sharing a story of a letter that you had to proofread mm-hmm. for an inmate that was going yeah. to his grandchildren, I think. So can you share that story with us in realizing that, man, sometimes choices are made and consequences are a reality.
Yeah.
But that's not the end of the story.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that quote. Absolutely love that quote. So we can call the inmate John just for the purpose of clarity. So John... He's only like 22, 23, so just about my age, actually, which was weird. And he was awaiting sentencing over at the jail for murder. He had been found guilty of it, and he was waiting to be sentenced. And so he actually was sending a letter to his grandparents.
Oh, I'm sorry, not grandchildren, his grandparents.
Right.
Okay, got it.
And so, you know, not you don't want to, you know, give up any of his own
no.
his, you know, personal details and things, but it basically was just a letter thanking them for raising him an apology letter, basically. And me and this inmate John had talked about his situation, and through writing he had expressed certain things and that kind of stuff, which was incredibly powerful. But again, don't want to give up any of his
no.
personal information. But it just, you know, yeah, he did a really bad thing, and that sucks, and that's the reality of it. But the reality of it is also that he's someone's grandchild, and he is seen by his grandparents as their family and their baby, and he's so much more than that bad decision that he made. And when you make a bad decision, all the other things in your heart don't go away. You know, your heart it's not erased because you did something bad. It's all still there. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I love that quote. John was so much more than the decision that he made. And I hope he grows from it and learns from it and can come out better, you know, at the end of it. And it is sad and it's heartbreaking because he was so young and to have made a decision like that is going to affect his life so dramatically. But he's still a person, and he still has a family, and he still has a heart. And
mm-hmm. Well, guys, we're coming to the end of this episode, and man, I really didn't think we were going to go this deep, but I wasn't sure what we were going to do. I thought we would just do a couple of stories, Tyler, and, you know, just talk about seniors and rising juniors and college life. But as I'm listening to you talk, I can sit here and think and wonder, maybe some of our listeners, you know, they may be a little bit closer than two distant cousins,
right?
You know, who got into a little trouble and spent a weekend in jail, right? Maybe they know someone very personal, maybe somebody in their own family, right? So what do you say to those people that have not yet heard the stories of transformation of their family members? They didn't get a letter from
right.
John.
Right.
They've not heard a phone call from Ron talk about his experience. How do you encourage them to not let the fact that their family member or their friend is incarcerated be forgotten?
I think my response to that, you can't always trust people. You know, I understand that people make decisions that can hurt the people that they love. And so you can't always trust people. But things that are free are love and forgiveness. Those are both free. Mm. And so trust may not be. And so I don't, you know, because I don't know everyone's situation. I don't want to tell them like, hey, go, you know, invest everything into this person because I don't know what they've been through, you know. But forgiveness is free. Love is free. And I, you know, just don't forget about the people that are in there. And you know, that's basically all I can say, because I don't want to step on anyone's experience. But it's a hard situation for a lot of people out there. And I think just showing love is the easiest way to help people heal as well on the inside. So many stories I hear from inmates are that they are forgotten. They do feel forgotten about. They feel thrown away. How can you heal in that situation? Mm-hmm. So I think just continuing to show love. That may not, you know, you can't show them monetary support. You can't, you know, put your trust in them, whatever. But just knowing that you don't think they're garbage, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. just letting them know that you do see the value in them, I think is huge.
And knowing from the voice of experience myself, forgiveness has a way of freeing me from my own internal prison.
Absolutely.
May not be living behind bars. Maybe you're listening to our episode today and you're in an internal prison. Maybe you have in your emotions, or maybe in your memory, or in your own spiritual condition, or the lack thereof. You know, you just kind of find yourself in bondage and captivity. The what you said was so true, Olivia, you know, that forgiveness and you said forgiveness and love
mm-hmm.
are free.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's so true. And so guys, I just want to encourage you to, I don't know what's going to happen when you get to Savannah, Georgia. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going to happen when you come back to Lee University, but what I'm confident of is wherever your footprint is, I think somebody else's life is going to be better. And you've proven that. And that's a huge impact. And that gives me hope. I've been at Lee University 17 years this year and pretty excited. I've met a lot of students. I've heard the stories, some up close, some personal, some very far and distant.
Mm-hmm.
It's been my treat today to sit and listen to you talk about your stories and the times that you've been challenged, but also the times that the Creator has used you to make investment in somebody else's life. So as you hear me say often on Surfcast, you're made for more. Whatever is going on in your life right now, whatever is happening for you this summer, just remember that the same breath that Kana and Olivia and I share is the same breath that the Creator gave to you. And so when you inhale, be sure when you exhale to make impact on somebody else's life, because you may be the very person called that day to step into their jail, be it figuratively or be it realistically. Either way, you're made for more. Until next time, thanks for joining us on Surfcast.
We find ourselves waiting again. to feel the waves stirred by heaven. Spirit of God, move as your heart desires. All of our walls come crashing down as we lean in to hear you now. Spirit of God, speak as your heart desires. Let the fullness of your presence come like fire. Something new, we're expectant, with our hands lifted high and our hearts open wide, we're expectant.
Expect.
Thank you for listening to this episode of ServeCast. The thoughts and opinions expressed on ServeCast are those of William Lamb, his guest, and no one else. Until next time, this is ServeCast, signing off from Studio 22.